Okay, Parshas Shoftim discusses unsolved murder, 1043, 1043. 1043, the unsolved murderer, the axed heifer. There it goes, still come inside and we'll try to figure it out. If a corpse will be found on the land that Hashem gives you to possess, and it was not known who smote him, the elders, the judges shall go out and measure. It shall be the city nearest the corpse. And then they take out a heifer that no work has been done to, and the elders come down to a certain valley, and they shall axe, I'm skipping words here, they shall axe the back of the heifer's neck, and the Kohanim shall approach it, and then they make a statement. All the elders of the city nearest the goat shall wash their hands in the valley, and they shall speak up and say. Now, we have discussed many times in this class. Many times in this class, we discuss what are the 613 mitzvahs, and what goes into fulfilling each mitzvah, and stuff like that. So we have here clearly a very vital situation of a mitzvah called the unsolved murder, which is a ritual. A ritual that's also a mitzvah. How many mitzvahs are involved with this as the 613 goes? Now remember, that not every part of it becomes a mitzvah. The Chaim Kanievsky, as I've spoken in the past, we did this years ago, has written a 500-page, multi-faceted encyclopedic work on this heifer, which we're going to discuss now. And he says that there are four main components to this mitzvah. Four mitzvahs are involved with each one of these. The reason why he calls them mitzvahs, not in the 613, counted as one of the 613, probably, but where it's counted on, each mitzvah needs a separate blessing. That's why he discusses it, but we don't have to discuss that detail. So he says this. What are the four mitzvahs involved? He said the first one is the measuring. A Kohen must measure, or the elders must measure it to a local city. That's a very crucial thing. That means if they find a corpse in the middle of nowhere, they have to draw a circumference circle around and then find the closest city. That means even if it's obvious, according to most of the commentators, that means it was found right outside the city.
There could be a problem with that.
Wait one second. If it's found right outside the city, they have to take the measurement and do a circumference. Even though it's obvious that with the naked eye, there's all the city nearby. The first thing is they must do the measurement based on that. Problem with what?
There could be a problem with that. Because sometimes the city that's further away is really closer because how the roads are made.
Excellent. As they say, as the crow flies, what's the phrase? Right? That's what it's called? That's what it goes on. But you are correct. The Talmud even discusses it at length. What do you do when you're going down a slope? How do you hold it up? How high does they have to hold it up? You hold it like this, you hold it like this. They have a measuring system, how it works, as the crow flows, correct. Awesome. And if it's a river in the way, if you go around the river, correct. So that wouldn't be, as the road goes, might be considered what's closer, what's further. Good point. Next.
Also, you mentioned last year on this thing, you said they take the head off.
Yes, they axe the head.
Yeah.
That's the second
mitzvah. The head stays right there.
Yes. So the second mitzvah is, the first mitzvah is the measuring. The second mitzvah is, they now take this axe, and what do they do? We said they shall axe the back of the heifer's neck. That's the second one. The third one, did we say it here? The third one is, he writes, that they have to wash their hands. That was in verse 6. All the elders of the city who are near for the corpse shall wash their hands over the heifer. So that becomes the third one, washing the hands. And the fourth one's going to be the statement that they make. Our hands have not spilled this blood, and our eyes did not see. That's what it is. So the four integral parts of this mitzvah, and it might be done separately, is measuring, axing the heifer, washing the hands, which you would have thought is like, who cares? And the statement, which you would have thought about, who cares? All right? Okay, so they say, they don't say, no, crucial detail, that's a mitzvah. And therefore, each one of these would probably need a separate blessing. That means they would make a blessing before they do the measuring. They would do a blessing before they ax the heifer. They would do a blessing before they wash their hands. And do a blessing on a statement that's not something you should ever do.
So it's eight commandments. The blessings and the...
Well, the blessings are called the command, but the blessings are how to fill the command correct. Well,
also,
You'll get credit for it, but not...
I think you might have left out one, perhaps, because they put the head on the road. It could be off the road where the murder took place, but they put the head on
yes,
the road.
Yes, but that's not a myth. That's not a myth. No, that's just not a detail. In everything, in all Judaism, you always have this question. When you're doing something, what counts as a mitzvah and what counts as a detail? It's a very extensive set of laws. You were right, but that's a detail, not a mitzvah.
This way people could see.
Oh, on to the next one. What about the fact that people should see? So when you go through the early commentators, what it is pointing out, it seems to be that they all point out that the oddity of this process was arranged in order to gather talk, to gather people discussing it, to make it into a thing. Why? According to most of the commentators, is here we found this guy on the road. That's how it all starts. A corpse we found on the land, and we don't know who did it. So in order to generate BuzzFeed, what they do is they do this process. almost like in today when they would keep on putting a pretty girl last year disappeared, who got killed in the end on the newspaper every single day. Why? Because keep the buzz going. Hopefully someone will see something that'll jog the memory. That's what they're all hoping for. That's really why they do it. It's like a buzz thing to get people to go. He says that's the reason for it. Okay, now. So Eliezer has made a good point before. Now, this is a question that Eliezer didn't ask, but that's the question. There, it seems to be that they want to make this a public procession. I mean, certain mitzvahs are done, and certain are publicized on purpose. For example, one of the more famous ones is when someone dies without any kids, and you do that levirate marriage, which we don't do today. We do the chalitza, I don't know what it is in English, the shoe thing. We want people to be there. We want people to be there. But that doesn't mean that the calling of people to show up is part of the mitzvah. That means you want people to do it. Why do you want people to do it? So the chinuch, Sefer Chinuch 1300, the Rambam, he says, and the Ramban, they all quote this idea. The more buzz created, the more likelihood they'll catch the murderer. More likely to catch the murderer. So it's not a commandment, and it's not a mitzvah to announce, everyone please show up, so it seems. But the purpose of it is to get everyone to come. Not that it's an announcement, we want that to happen. But just because you want something to happen doesn't make it automatically a mitzvah. So we want everyone to show up, and we have four separate parts of the mitzvah that occur. Why do we want everyone to show up again? We want everyone to show up again because we're hoping the buzz created will be able to catch this murderer. We don't know who did it. More people talking, and that's right. By the way, again, in America today, that's what's done all the time. When they care for the victim, if they don't care for the victim, that's what they want to. That girl who disappeared on the island many years ago, I forgot the Irish guy, they caught that guy. So what do they keep on doing? They keep on buzzing it, keep it in the news. Hopefully it jogs the memory of someone dead, or it creates pressure on the prosecutors and the investigators and the police to do something about it. That would be the first reason. So, and that, better openly. Sefer HaKhenach openly says this. The reason is in order to produce information, people should jog memories in order to catch the murder. Second reason given by some of them, that's what we're going to discuss tonight, the differences between them maybe. The second reason given by some of the commentators, most of the commentators, as I just said, the reason is to create buzz to catch the murderer. The other commentator said, wait a second, we're talking about in the year 2000 BC, or even 30 AD, right? No phones, no newspapers. You found the corpse. What about this guy? What are you going to do with this guy? It's possible. He has a wife somewhere. I think, Stephen, years ago you came up with this on your own. The guy has a wife somewhere. We want the wife to find out. She's sitting in the middle of nowhere. The guy went on her business. He hasn't come home. Whatever happened to the guy? So by creating this buzz, we're hoping the wife will find that as well in order for her to move on with her life. Or, again, if we find the murderer, well, we find that she's dead. She can now get married. We have witnesses to the corpse allows her to get married. So the main reason brought down by the commentators, the reason brought down by most of the commentators is to catch the murderer. The reason brought down by some of the commentators is in order to get the wife free, to let her know that her husband's gone and she can move on and remarry. Hopefully, there'll be witnesses to the thing. But if no one knows about it, if you find the guy on the corpse on the road and you put him in the ground 2 seconds later, because you want to do a mitzvah, Mace Mitzvah, you want to do a Mace Mitzvah, you want to bury, we believe in burying people right away, you want to bury the guy right away, you know what's going to happen? No one talks about it, no one knows about it. And the wife sitting in the Hopkinsville is stuck for the rest of her life as an almana, but she doesn't even know. Remember, the hardest thing about Judaism is, not the hardest thing, one of the more difficult processes is, in order for a woman to marry, there has to be testimony of the guy God. We don't need two witnesses, even though normally you do. The rabbi said, no, have one witness. But even one witness, you need something. It can't just be the guy didn't show up. Not showing up, this was a major event after World War II, after all wars, because a lot of times people just killed and buried, and nobody saw the body, or nobody saw the body, knows the wife, and that's it. And, of course, this became a major, major issue after 9/11. How do we know that the guy was in the building? But 9/11 happened. The husband doesn't show up. It could be the husband doesn't show up because tragically passed away in the building. That's not good enough. In Judaism, you have to know, somehow verify that the husband's in the building. And that's not easy. Just because he says he went to work doesn't mean he went to work. You have to know. That becomes a big issue. So here, what we want to do is we don't want to bury the body right away. No one's going to find out. What we do is we make a buzz, make a big thing about this. We do some weird procession. We try to not force, but we try to announce that people to come see this weird process. Because believe me, if this process happens once in a while, everyone shows up to see it. Wants to know what the halacha is, how it gets done. Everyone shows up. The wife finds out.
Oh, so you want someone to come to identify the body?
Yes.
Not just say there's a person and yes, make a description, what he looks like.
Yeah, well, you hope we'll get there.
You want someone who actually knows.
Hopefully eventually. Now, the difference between we're going to go through now, the difference. It was our brains that did that. The difference between these two reasons. As we've said many times in this class, if you know the reason for the law, then you can make up your own law based on the reasons behind it. But we have two reasons now why we make a big hoopla on the situation. Either to catch the murderer, or that we find the wife and move on. Question number one. The hoopla is, we said there's four parts of this mitzvah. The four parts of this mitzvah take place in two separate times. There is the measuring that happens on a Wednesday of Tishrei. And then, you don't do the same day. Then once you figure what the local city is, then you have the three other mitzvahs of axing of the heifer, of the Kohanim washing their hands in the place they axed the heifer, and then giving the speech that they have to say during the axing. So three mitzvahs happen. I'm going to make up a number a week and a half later. While the counting happens a week and a half earlier. What part do we want a lot of people to be there? Do we need them by both parts? Or is one part good enough? So it's very simple. If the point is to create hoopla for the murderer, then I would say both parts create hoopla. The more buzz it goes, the more you keep it in the newspapers, the more it goes, the more you have a chance to find out. But if the point is to get the wife, some people, as Eliezer said correctly, should identify the body, there's a problem there. Because when is the body still available for identification? It's prior to the measuring. But once the measuring is done, you go back to the natural laws and you bury the body immediately. And let's say, well, just an example. On a Wednesday morning, you do the measuring. You're going to bury the body Wednesday afternoon. And then a week and a half later, you're going to go through this whole process. Sometimes 3.5 months later. The Mishnah says they would get together, the court, in Adar, the month of Adar, to discuss, do they have to do this act? They weren't discussing keeping the body around. Obviously, they were discussing the ceremony, which means they did the measuring and the burial in the middle of the winter, and they waited for Adar to do this weird ceremony. But at the weird ceremony, at that point in time, there is no body to be identified. So according to the reason that you're trying to find out for the wife to get her witnesses, according to Eliezer, to identify the body, you would not contradict the Eliezer. He said something good, and then he contradicted himself. You would not need to have a hoopla at the second part of this process. Because the second part of the process would not help identify. The hoopla, by the measuring, will get witnesses who this guy is and that he died. And they'll have memories. We know that the guy died, his nose looked like this, his eyes looked like this, he's wearing this shirt, won't be good enough. But a combination of things, we know these features on it.
He has birthmark over
birthmark, here, tattoo, we figured it all out. And we put it on record because a lot of people there, a lot of people saw. Sometimes the guys go, I know that birthmark. That's part of that gang over there. I know what he's part of, or something weird like that. Or, and okay, Tupac. And eventually it gets back to the wife. It doesn't get back to the wife in a day and a half. It'll get back to it eventually. But the first difference is going to be, we want hoopla by both ceremonial parts or only by one.
Rabbi, question. How much witnesses do you need for estate purposes?
Excellent.
What do you need? You need...
So the rule is that we need two witnesses for everything. When it comes to the woman remarrying, which includes under the umbrella estate planning, then the one witness will be good enough. And by the way, even though normally we do not accept females as testimony, normally we don't accept slave testimony, the rabbi said in the case of the corpse body, not necessarily in this case, in a million cases, anytime there's a case of a woman remarrying, we allow both a female witness, both a slave witness, we allow much more because we do want things to move on. Otherwise, every time someone disappears, the wife is stuck in a laguna and the kids can't inherit the money. In fact, we even said once at the beginning of Eicha, when it talks about a city in solitude, it says like a widow. We once asked in this class many moons ago, we asked why it say like a widow. And the answer is why it says like a widow is because it's not a real widow. Because a real widow, here's the word I'm reading right now on 12:33. Alas, she sits in solitude. The city that was great with people has become like a widow. Now, obviously, the simple interpretation like a widow means she is like a widow. But it says, no. So she is a widow. No, it's worse. She's only like a widow. What does like a widow mean as opposed to a real widow? Like a widow means she doesn't have the advantage of having one witness. You know what that means? She can never get remarried, and her children cannot inherit the estate. The worst thing in the world is like a widow. A widow beats like a widow, because a widow moves on in life. Sadly to say, you move on in life. It's a sad situation, you move on. Like a widow cannot move on because the courts will not allow it. You need that one to show up. And that means for both the kids and the estate, and it means for the wife remarrying. So, difference number one between the reasons behind that having a lot of people show up, difference number one is going to be, do we have a lot of people show up for both the measuring and the decapitation, or for one only? Next one. What about...
You got to identify.
What about cases where... Let's go to the other side first. Cases where we know the guy was unmarried. Either he was in town. Let's say he's a minor. A six-year-old kid got to the family room. Odds are we go through this process for a six-year-old. It doesn't say in the Torah, when you find an adult corpse, doesn't say that. When you find a corpse, odds are, we'll see in a second, a fascinating Gemara, odds are, even on a child corpse, you will go through this process. But guess what? Males at the age of six are not married. So if you believe that the reason behind creating hoopla is to catch a murderer, hoopla is necessary here too. We don't allow child killers to get away with it. We don't want that either. But if it is because we have to find a wife, no reason for the hoopla. Because minor children do not have hoopla. Now you're going to say, what about our minor? Is it that simple, minor children? Do we do? Now again, Chumash doesn't say anywhere about specifying what type of corpse it is, but it's a fascinating line in the Gemara. Kaskal asks a question.
We all say that's the word, a male corpse. Does it apply to women corpse?
Yeah, again, because it says the word corpse, it would apply male, female, slave, child, adult. I'll tell you why. I just thought of this right now. Because we just said before, I don't know if I'm right about this, it's all on the spot. We said before that what? That technically when we find a dead body, not even a dead body finding, in Jewish law, we believe bury ASAP, before nightfall. A positive mitzvah and a negative violation if it's not done by nightfall. Or by the next morning. We discussed that many, many years ago. But there's a biblical multiple obligations to bury right away. When the case of the measuring, when we take out the stick, we don't measure right away. Nope, we have to wait. We have to wait. We measure from the body. So if it takes 3 days to get the bezdin here with the sticks and the things, you got to go over the river, you got to go over the highway, you got to start measuring hands up, all this type of stuff. Let's say it takes 3 days to set it up. So the 3 days, the body's not being buried. But we allow the body not being buried for this mitzvah. Interesting enough, the Gemara talks about Shalom Ella destroying the nation of Amalek, which he did not destroy the nation of Amalek. We discussed it many times. And now, we know as little kids, we read the books. And what's the story we know? Steve, what's the story we know? You did remember this, Stephen. Is that Shaul felt bad, and he left the king alive. And the king made it that night and produced the future of Amalek. We at one point almost destroyed Amalek. We're down to one person. That's what the Medrash says. Well, let's read the Gemara's phrase here. The Gemara is discussing this story of Shaul. We're in Yuma 22b. At the time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go kill Amalek, Shaul had a response. Shaul's response was this. If regarding one life, the Torah says, go through a wild process we're discussing today, the Egel Rufa, the Axe Heifer. Why? Because one guy on the road is dead. And I can go destroy everybody. I wipe out an entire nation. 19 article says, Shaul's point was that he required atonement having killed all these people. He said, listen, I wasn't doing what I did. I look what I'm doing here. The world cares about one dead body in the road. I can't go wipe all that. I must have done something wrong. Now, Shaul left over the animals. He said, Im Adam Chay, if the people of Amalek are bad people, I understand that. The Hemimachal, if the animals I don't have to kill right away, let me bring the animals as offerings because in the end I kill people. Extra words goes very important right here. Im Gedolim Chatu, if the adults of Amalek nation can be considered evil, famous philosophical question on Judaism. What about minor children? Shaul, there's one line. I'm going to read something right here. Unbelievable. I did not feel this. Shaul is saying, if the adults should get killed, they understand. Why should the kids get killed? They didn't do anything wrong. So the first interpretation, which is what I always thought was the main interpretation, is, in fact, Shaul killed the children. He stresses the innocence to know what he needs as a atonement. It's all of this Shaul saying, why do I got to do this? Why do I got to do that? It's all theoretical. He killed everyone except for one. Alternatively, mind-blowing, Shaul speared the miners. That means Shaul, when you learn the story, you learn the wrong. He didn't only leave over the king. He left over the miners, anyone on the 13. Why? Because he said, what about Eglah Ruf? We care about one person. That implies that we do an Eglah Ruf for a miner. Because Shaul's saying, we do an Eglah Ruf for one soul. I can't go kill out everyone. If the adults did it, what about the children? That's all based on this thing with the Eglah Ruf, which means, according to some, they bring a proof from this, that a minor does do an Eglah Ruf. We're a step later. There's no open process. We're a step later saying, do we actually have the hoopla around? Yes, Stephen.
What about for a guy?
Ah, who is that? Bodenheim? I was hoping no one was going to ask that question, Bodenheim. Ruined my night, Bodenheim. There is a great debate. Great debate. And it's in this Gemara. Do non-Jews... Are non-Jews If you find a corpse and you know it's an entree, if you're in doubt, for sure. It seems from most of the commentators that a open for sure non-Jew, you would not go through this entire process. And Bodenheim is pointing out, wait a second, that means if Bodenheim is saying it correctly, Shaul's conversation made no sense. Why is that? You're asking Bodenheim, why is Shaul saying what we care about one nefesh egel harufa? That's only Jews we do this process for. You're killing out the evil empire. You're killing out the Germans at the worst time in history. Excellent question. Literally, we could do a whole class on that one. On what, if we assume non-Jews do not get an egel harufa, what is Shaul's conversation here? But we're ignoring that, and we're focusing on the minor. Next one. What about, this is what Eliezer almost said before, the wife lived in the city, and we know she knows already. Let's say the guy was killed outside the city, but we don't know how he got killed, but we know he is. And we right away tell the wife. If the wife knows right away, is there a point for the hoopla?
Or get the murderer's thing.
Oh, if the reason behind the hoopla is to get the murderer, Kassel says correctly, we want hoopla. Keep it front page of the newspapers. We got to catch the murderer. But if the reason behind it is going to be why, so the wife should find out about it and not remain in an aguna her entire life, she already knows about it. Who cares? So all of these reasons I gave now, a minor, another wife, and twice at once, is all going that we might not need it when it comes to the body being buried ready. Let's go another case. We discussed this years ago, Stephen.
You know,
if someone has a defect, if someone has a medical defect, and he's called a trefa in Jewish law, it means he cannot live for 12 months. In Jewish law, if someone kills him, the courts do not do any punishment. You can only get punished by our courts, not God, for killing what we call a live person. The person is not alive. We don't kill him. So let's say we know that the dead body, before he was killed, had a hole in his head. But we knew the guy. We knew the guy, and we knew this guy had 3 months to live. In that case, we don't care about a murderer. Because even if we catch the murderer, we can't do anything about it. The court's hands are tied because he didn't kill the dead guy. The question is, when we say we want to catch the murderer, why do we want to catch the murderer? Do we want to catch the murderer so the courts can take revenge on the guy and kill him? Or we want to take the murderer?
Maybe Muad.
So if we want to take revenge on this guy, then if he killed an incapacitated person, there might not be a reason.
He might have killed other people. Murderer.
Then we want to catch him for those crimes. Maybe.
Confess.
Question is, do we want to, the victim.
The murderer might have to pay damages.
What?
Murder would be subject to damages for the murder, even if he's not punished for it.
Not bad. We read today. I'll tell you something amazing.
That's right. You got to pay the penalty.
We spoke years ago that there is a very strange Targum medicine. Targum medicine says, and some say it's before you decapitate the animal. That means you don't always, it depends how you read it, you don't always necessarily axe the animal. When the animal gets into the location where it's ready to be axed, it says the kahanim, the medrash says kahanim, before they axe it, they do the old, hit the back of the head. I had a rabbi student that back of the head hits, ooh, brutal. They hit the animal the back of the head to see what the animal's next move is. If the animal stays put, groundhog dead, they kill the animal. But if the animal moves, then they don't touch the animal yet. Where does the animal go? They watch if the animal leaves the area. Because then, spiritually speaking, I can't explain this at all, the animal leads them to the murderer's house. Some say when you decapitate the animal, worms come out of the animal and lead you there. And some say worms come out of the victim's body, the different midrash. But it seems to be that when the process is done on a certain way, the murderer will be found out. Now, Stephen's next question he hasn't asked yet, and Bowden and I'm thinking of too. Let's say we find the murderer that way. Courts don't kill people if we know they murdered, unless what? Properly warned, two witnesses with it. What's the whole point? So in a way, it comes to holding. What do you mean you want to catch the murderer? Let's say we catch the murderer. Let's say we know 100% the guy did it because the worms are following him. Pretty disgusting, gruesome sight. The march of the worms. The worms are going from the decapitated animal, if we go in that measure, and the worms are marching, and we're following the trumpets, follow the worms. We don't do anything anyway. See, we don't do anything anyway, but we want to catch the guy. Maybe if the victim as well was prayed for, right, we can't do anything. But as Charles said, we still want to catch the guy. For other reasons, we want to catch.
Well, the relatives, maybe the relatives could go after him.
I say stop because the camera's going up. What are we saying? For the relatives.
Relatives can go after Goel Adam, yeah.
Excellent. They actually said it, the Goel Adam. Question of the laws of Goel Adam when it applies. Very, very good. Both numbers, 2 for 2 tonight. Anyway, have a great night. Elzman has begun. Elul has begun, Yedidya. Repent. God's local, davening's easier.
Is this the month of miracles?
Thank you. Good night.